This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Save a Pooch on Pet Life Radio. I'm Beverly Isla, your host. Thank you for listening in today. We have two special guests today. We have Sloan Miner, president and co-founder of Zion's Mission Animal Rescue in Queens, New York. She also has Maribel, who is the director of community outreach and events. So with a dedication to animal welfare and experience supporting rights, Sloan has become a powerful voice in combating dog fighting and advocating for the survivors. So through the organization, they lead crucial efforts in rescuing, rehabilitating, and rehoming animals while working to educate communities about the impact of animal cruelty. So when we get back from these messages, we will hear from Sloan and Maribel.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Save a Pooch. We are talking with Sloan Miner and Maribel from the Zion's Mission Animal Rescue. Thank you guys for taking the time today. Your guys' work in addressing dog fighting, I have to say, I think this is the first one I've talked about on my show so far, and its impact on communities is super important. So let's start with your journey, Sloan. What drove you to establish Zion's Mission Animal Rescue, and how has your background in activism shaped your approach to rescue work?
So when I was growing up, my mom always worked at shelters, so we've always been like a rescue family. So when I was growing up, we only rescued cats. My mom worked at shelters like before social media, before all of those things. So she instilled in me and sort of fostered my compassion and my love and drive to help the animals. So, you know, as I grew up, I always had a focus on helping our four-legged friends. In my experience, I've always sort of been more bonded with animals initially than people. And as I know, millions of people can say, animals have helped me through some of the toughest times of my life. So I always wanted to pay it back. I say paw it forward and give back to them because they were there for me at my most vulnerable times. So initially, I was involved in a lot of animal rights activism in terms of anti-medical testing. So, you know, we worked on a campaign called the Shack Campaign, Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty, for years. And that involved doing home demonstrations. That was the first campaign that actually targeted the money of the facility, Huntington Life Science. So what we would do is the campaign was a global campaign. What we would do is when somebody invested in Huntington Life Science, we would go after that company to divest. So we would go, if Bristol Squibb invested in Huntington Life Science, we would go to the houses of the president, the vice president of Bristol Myers, and protest outside, hand out leaflets, and get them to divest. And everybody in this global campaign would do that. It was the first campaign that actually targeted them financially. To make a long story short, that actually became, now it's illegal to target a company like that financially. And there were actually seven people who were jailed. They're called the Shack Seven. And they were jailed for basically free speech and handing out leaflets and showing up and encouraging these people by doing home demonstrations to divest. And the company was actually brought to its knees, and their NASDAQ, their ticker went from like, you know, whatever, what was it, $30 to begin with, down to a penny. And what happened was that right when they were going to shut down, because Huntington Life Sciences was also based in England and in New Jersey, which is why it was a global campaign. What happened was another corporation came in and saved them. You know, so that was one of my biggest campaigns. And it was also one of the biggest heartbreaks, because stopping medical animal testing is something that is super passionate for so many people. And in this day and age, it's not necessary, when in fact, 90% of the drugs that they're testing on these animals, are their bodies aren't the same as ours, and they fail. Not to mention the brutal acts of just testing on toothpaste or household products like Clorox. People don't realize what they do to the animals. So, you know, it's just a barbaric practice that is totally unnecessary in 2025. So fortunately, there's been a lot of progress. And there is an amazing group called Beagle Freedom Project, run by one of my friends, Shannon Keith. And she actually takes all of the animals, like the beagles and the different animals, out of the medical testing facilities when they retire them. And so since she's a lawyer, she's passed legislation in multiple states.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So she's really huge. And she was like a huge inspiration for me as well. And then from that, we segued into rescuing one animal at a time, if you will. So that's sort of how I was brought into animal rescue.
Wow. You started off with a bang then. Instead of the opposite of starting small, you just, amazing. Yeah. Good for you, man. That is awesome. And you know what? Yeah, we do need more people like that on the medical front, for sure. Now, can you help our listeners understand the connection between dog fighting, other forms of community violence? Like where I am, I don't see it. It's not common. So I don't know if it's underground, it's an underground thing, or if it's a location thing.
No. So our community is basically Rockaway and Queens, and Rockaway and Far Rockaway. There's a huge constituency of residents that are underserved and underprivileged. And there's a lot of projects. There's a lot of low economic income, if you will. So there is a lot of dog fighting on multiple forefronts. So, for example, one of the most recent cases that we've been working on, there's a project called Hamel Houses in Rockaway. And those people who are fighting dogs in there, it's multiple people. When they fight the dogs, as per our witness accounts, the people we've interviewed, the people who speak to us, they fight them in the hallways. They're very brazen. They fight them in the hallways. Sometimes the residents have told me that they get trapped in elevators and they have to keep staying in the elevator because they're fighting the dogs. There are certain apartments that everybody knows that they fight the dogs. And then they do another thing, too. Some of the dog fighters, they'll date different women. And when those women are at work or whatever they do, they're taking over their apartment. So one of the residents told me that actually they had a developmentally mentally challenged daughter. And the daughter went over to an apartment in the project to see her friend. And when she walked in, there was like a trail of blood. And the animal was screaming on the floor, and that she watched the animal die. And the mom told me that the daughter still has like PTSD from it. And apparently the boyfriend had moved in and was doing this while this woman was at work. And, you know, they said she didn't know about it. So they do that. So they use apartments. They use their own apartments. The one specific person that we know of now that we've been trying to get the authority to do something. One of the witnesses said that they've been in the apartment, and they actually, because they breed and they fight. So they bought a dog from them. They went in the apartment. They bought a puppy. And they said the whole apartment is just like dog kennels, and the floor's all ripped up. They even made the oven a dog kennel with babies, you know, like they put the babies in there because they'll have three litters at a time in there because they're breeding. They're using the animals as like an ATM. So the problem is multifaceted, because not only do you have animal abuse going on, but this specific person I know is beating the girlfriend. Everybody knows that animal violence escalates to human violence.
Yes.
So you have that going on. And then you also have a lot of children in the mix here, because these children are growing up with these people and or just witnessing this happening in the building and people getting away with it. And this becomes normalized. So you have, you know, a younger generation learning this is okay, right? You have people in the building being held hostage by this criminal activity. and you have the people who are maybe even with these guys or the girls who are doing it that are also in physically abusive situations. And then you have the lasting effect, obviously, on the animals, which is absolutely like heinous acts of cruelty being committed them. And then you have some of the residents also tell me that they don't even take their dogs out anymore. And their dogs just pee on pee pads. They're afraid to take them outside. So you have people in there with dogs who haven't gone out in years. Because these people, when they do take their dogs out, they often let them run the hallways. And so there's been altercations with the dogs jumping on people, running, attacking other dogs. Because they train the dogs to use anything as bait. So like when they find there's a huge problem because with the cat rescuers there too, and the cat feeders, because they bring the dogs out at night and they'll stick them on the cats. So, you know, you got feral colonies, right, that are being affected. You have cats that are, you know, cats also outside cats. It's so bizarre to me because people seek an outside cat and they say, oh, it's just a cat. Like they suffer in silence, but they suffer right in front of everybody. So, you know, you have all these animals being affected. They use possums, they use squirrels, they let them fight with raccoons. So they do, you know, nothing is off limits here. And everybody is afraid to speak. So they'll talk to me, but then they're very scared because they have to live here. The other part of the problem is now you have a lack of enforcement on the laws. You have a lack of the authorities coming in. We were at NYPD 100th Precinct Community Meeting. I was there with our sister rescue, Sasha's mission, Kim, and we go into all these places and together we're collecting all of this information. And when Kim and I were there, you know, we were explaining to them, you want all these people to come forward who are stuck in these housing projects. And then what if they come forward? You guys don't do anything anyway. So now you hung them out to dry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's really sort of a perfect storm for these criminals to continue to act like that. And that's why they fight them in the hallways. It doesn't matter what time of day it is or night, because they're so brazen, because they know no one's coming. They know they're not going to get in trouble.
Oh, boy.
And if I could jump in with some statistics, you know, it's a lot of individuals, or I should really say abusers, not just in Hamel houses or in Rockaway, Queens, like a lot of them usually are tied in New York State. If you were to get arrested for animal cruelty, because of our laws in New York State, which, you know, are very archaic, usually these abusers get jail time if it's tied into another crime like drug use or abusing of people. So, you know, about 70% of people who are charged with animal abuse are also people who have been charged with other types of felonies prior to that arrest. So, you know, on the animal rights side, we're advocating to stop these animal abusers, but we should be getting more help from the public in general and also with our police community as well to stop these abusers, because if they can do this to any dog or any animal, they are definitely doing it to our community. And it just becomes a public safety as well, where they're fighting the dogs, but they could also be selling drugs. Many people are allegedly tied to gangs. So it's just safety concerns for any living being.
Absolutely.
And in the Hamel houses, the gang that is doing the primarily stuff that we're investigating, they're Crips. So, and they're also running the dogs into Far Rockaway, and they have gang houses over there where they have big kennels and stuff that they keep them. And, you know, when we were at the community board meeting, we were at a community board meeting and then we were at the 100th precinct meeting, you know, our focus isn't really on these officers. A lot of the times the people blame the officers. There are things in the 100th precinct, like they're not responding to 911 calls, that they do need to be held accountable. But this is really a trickle down effect from the top down. Like example for our NYPD animal cruelty unit, like I can count on my hand how many times they've helped us. And I can tell you I wouldn't need any fingers. So, you know, we are constantly having sort of heated discussions and conversations with not only the animal cruelty, and I put that in parenthesis, but also the district attorney, because it's just really unfathomable to me that New York City isn't prosecuting when there are other counties and other districts in our state, for example, like Suffolk, who actually make animal cruelty arrests. So we need to enforce the laws on the books, train the officers to respond properly. Because when I was at the meeting, I also explained to them, when you look through an officer's training, I found intro to PowerPoint multiple times on different officers, but there's not one animal cruelty class. And Kim, Sasha's mission, her kids are cops. And the only kind of training they have is when they are at the academy and they have the ASPCA come in and they do like a little presentation. So I pointed out to them that when I pull out the comp sheet, right, and you see domestic violence, all these charges, what's been going on, animal cruelty isn't listed. When you pull up the NYPD animal cruelty stats, it says from last June till this past December, there were 3 calls that came into the 100th precinct, which is totally false, because I can tell you, and I told them at the meeting and everybody there, everybody's called multiple times, including people who've called 911 in the middle of dog fights that they were there. Cat feeders were there. So they're not reporting the statistics, right? They're not putting animal cruelty on the stat sheets, and they're not making it a priority to train officers in responding to any sort of animal call. And right there, that's signifying to all of these officers that's not really an important issue. And again, that's wrong. So, you know, so it's all of this top-down, trickle-down effect that this is a broken system for the animals and for the people who are subjected to being held captive by these criminals who are fighting dogs.
Yeah, this is a much bigger picture, because now you're exactly right. It is community safety as well.
It's a public safety, yeah.
Yes. We'll definitely get into that. We're just going to have a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking with Sloan and Maribel.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Save a Pooch. We are talking with President and Co-Founder of Zion's Mission Animal Rescue, Sloan Miner, and their Director of Community Outreach and Events, Maribel. All right, so, wow. The solution in all this is so multifaceted, I wouldn't even know where to begin. But, like, how does your organization approach community outreach? I mean, it's good that you have, like, somewhat of connections within the police, but obviously it's not really helping. So what can you do in those cases?
Well, what we're trying to do is, for example, like yesterday and the day before. So the day before yesterday, a woman was on Rockaway Beach Boardwalk, and there are 2 dogos. They're Dojo Argentinian dogs. They look like pit bulls. So people often say, like, oh, there's 2 white pit bulls attacking.
Right.
But these dogs have been getting out from this owner who is clearly a degenerate for multiple reasons. He keeps the dogs outside. He lives in an SRO. It's alleged he's a drug problem. By observing him, it looks that way to me. We've had multiple outreach to people who have been attacked multiple times prior to this woman 2 days ago, because these dogs, you know, dojos are also big game hunters, right? They have a huge high prey drive. He's weaponizing these dogs, and he's letting them go and attack people and small dogs. So this has been going on. When somebody there called 911 because she was bitten really badly trying to get her dog away from them, and they weren't trying to bite her necessarily, they were trying to bite the dog. The police didn't answer the 911 call. When she went in to make the reports, she told us that they weren't helpful and they were, you know, dismissive, and that she had to basically force them to take the report. And then yesterday, somebody else contacted us about another situation where another person let their dog loose and they were bit on the ankle. Then the day before that, there was somebody else that there's a police call, a 911 call from it. Another guy let their dogs loose and they attacked this other guy's small dog. So this is like a huge problem in Rockaway, because none of these laws are enforced and because there's no police response to any animal calls. So again, these people know I can do whatever I want.
Right. And while Sloan is speaking with witnesses and, you know, the victims of these attacks and dog fighting, I'm on the other side lobbying with, you know, our local government people. So we're very lucky to work very closely with one of our council members, Joanne Areola, who oversees part of the Rockaways up to Howard Beach. And she's a huge animal advocate as well. So we're very lucky to have her in our corner. But, you know, she can't solve the issue on her own. So right, I've been reaching out to, you know, the assembly persons that represent the Rockaways. And I've also reached out to the Queensborough president and their office. And, you know, sometimes I'll get a response back and sometimes I don't. I find that for many politicians, animals are not on their radar. And right now, New York is going through an election cycle. So, you know, right now I'm getting more answers back to our call to actions and our advocacy, just because we know they're looking for votes. They're looking for photo ops. You know, they're going to play the political game, and I'm happy to play the political game back with them as long as they help the cause. But it's also really disheartening to see certain local political agencies and, like, you know, the district attorney's office and other, you know, there's one assemblywoman who has promised to help us for animal rescue and animal rights when we were handling animal sacrificing that was happening in a nearby neighborhood. So we never heard anything back from her. So we get a lot of these promises from politicians who actually have power to help make change. And usually they don't follow through, or they say this is much bigger than what we can do, or they pass the buck on to some other agency. And then the work is then falling into the laps of local animal rescues like us that are doing our best, but we just don't have that political or legal power to make the changes right that we desperately need.
Exactly. And you also have to, I guess, consider your own safety as well in this whole mix of a mess. Let's pivot and go into the rehabilitation process for dogs rescued from fighting situations. If they are even rescued, like, do some even survive to get adopted out?
In our experience, many survive, but there is a long process. And as a rescue and as a responsible organization, when you take any dog from any traumatic situation, whether they're in a dog fighting or they're a bait dog, or they're being horrifically beaten, or, you know, have some sort of extreme cruelty being placed on them, you have to have a trusted training process, because it's irresponsible to just take a dog situation and then throw that dog with somebody else. Like, that's not responsible. You know, you have a huge liability issue right there.
Yeah.
And the other part about that is too, that when dogs come out of traumatic situations, any of those situations, whether it being beaten every day, tied to a radiator, you know, extreme neglect, dog fighting, anything like that, sometimes when you first have the dog, right, the dog is not feeling well, the dog is very sick, or the dog is fear aggressive. You know, there's all things going on, but you need time to really let that dog be and see the true nature of the dog, right? So while you're having that decompression time for the dog, which can take, you know, a month to 3 months, you really need to have a training plan in place, because you don't know what's going to come out in that personality, right? So before you place any of those dogs, those dogs have to go through a major rehabilitation. So we work quite closely with a few trainers who we utilize very often for long-term situations for dogs that are coming out of you know, situations like that. And again, that's because you really need to see how that dog is going to, once they're feeling healthy again, or once they're not afraid anymore, like, what is their personality? Like, who can they be around? Who should they be around? You know what I mean? That those types of situations. We find a lot of times that people want to help a dog, but then they end up putting the dog in a worse position and setting the dog up for failure, because you're not allowing for all these things. You know, people will take a dog from a bad situation and then throw the dog with somebody else, and then the dog does something, and it might not be that dog's fault necessarily. You know, who knows what situation they put them in, you know, especially with kids and things like that, other animals.
Right.
So you really have to have a plan. And it's not cheap to rescue a dog who's been in a situation like that. So you also have to have resources, you know, because whenever you commit to an animal, like, you better be able to see that through, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And what are some common misconceptions then about the adoptability of dogs rescued from fighting situations? What have you seen, like, when dogs have been rescued out, do they get returned, or do the adopters actually, like, see it through?
You know, it depends. I can't speak for a lot of other people, but whenever we've had dogs like that, they've seen it through. We had one very, very serious case like that, and the dog really had a hard time with other people. He bonded specifically to the foster at that point, but we had the trainer. First, he was in a board and train. Then he went to the foster's house, bonded with the foster, but then he didn't want anybody else near the foster, and he really guarded her. And, you know, there were a lot of issues, and she kept him and worked really hard, but she changed her whole life around to work so that she could work with the trainer. And it was like, you know, almost a year before somebody else could come in the house, you know? So even if he was in a crate in the other room or in another room, he would freak out.
Right.
So he was trying, he wanted to protect her. So it depends on who you're finding. You know what I mean? But there definitely are people who have a soft spot for the traumatic situations. You know, like, you can just look at like the Michael Vick dogs. Look at all those dogs that were adopted. I think they only put down like one or two of those dogs, right? Like, all those dogs that were adopted, those people worked again with those dogs, and they worked with trainers, and they documented everything. So there's hope for all of these animals. But again, you can't just classify them as saying, oh, they're fighting dogs, and so therefore this, right? Because that's making a general assumption. Every dog's an individual. Every dog needs to be treated like an individual, despite whatever their background is.
Yes, very good point. I'm really glad you brought that out, because yes, there will be stigma around.
Yeah, they need to be assessed as just one dog, not what they came from or whatever, you know?
Exactly. Not their career.
I think another misconception, especially in dog fighting, is, you know, a lot of dog fighters use large breed dogs like pit bulls. And there's always this misconception that they're aggressive dogs and this is their natural behavior, is to attack.
Right.
And that's not necessarily true. This behavior is being taught to them by the humans, because there are so many animals. They're not born that way. Some do have natural, you know, prey drives like a dogo. But, you know, the dog isn't just going to attack another dog randomly out of nowhere in such a vicious way. That's taught behavior, and that's trained behavior from a young age. And that could be worked through. So having these misconceptions of, well, a pit bull or a dogo or a Rottweiler, you know, any of these dogs that usually get a negative stereotype associated with them, or a bad rep, if you will, it's all misconception based on how humans raise them. And it's not how they actually are. Because, you know, once they can go through rehabilitation and training the way Sloan explained, these dogs are wonderful. They're gentle. They're loving. They've just been taught that they need to fight or seriously protect, and they're traumatized. And, you know, humans, when we get traumatized in terrible situations too, we get very protective. So we can also lash out in survival mode. So if humans can do that, animals can do that too. And it's all just circumstantial. And I think when we continue to talk about specific breeds of dogs, we really need to change our language and mindsets. And that may just have to come through education workshops and information given by animal advocacy group, rescue shelters, anyone who's willing to teach about these animals in a positive light.
Sure. Exactly.
One last thing. The other thing about, they use pit bulls for fighting primarily too. Well, because of how they were, what they're bred to do, you know, but also because they're super loyal to their owner and they want to please.
Yeah.
So they're using their loyalty against them. And so that's why a lot of these big breeds get bad raps, because they're actually very sweet. But they're so loyal, they want to please their owner. And it goes the same with the medical testing. That's why they use beagles in medical testing, because beagles are so docile and they don't bite the people who are hurting them. So that's why when, like, Shannon gets beagles from medical labs, you'll often see in some of her videos, and she'll say, and she'll cry, when you go up to them, they'll just repeatedly give you their paw to get blood.
Oh, wow.
They're docile. That's why they use beagles. So it's the same kind of thing. They use their positive attributes against them.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a very important point to point out as well, is their innate personality. Thank you so much, guys. We are out of time. I really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks to our show producer, Mark Winter, for making the show possible. You can learn more about Zion's Mission at zionsmissions.org, and the link will also be on the show page. And I'm so grateful for you guys for bringing out the issue behind dogfighting, because it's way more than I would have expected it to be. So thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for our show, please email me at beverly@petliferadio.com. So until next time, spread animal compassion.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.